Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Clay Calvert, the Brechner Eminent Scholar in Mass Communication and Director of the Marion B. Brechner First Amendment Project at the University of Florida. He's authored or co-authored more than 130 law journal articles on topics related to freedom of expression. Welcome to Background Briefing, Clay Calvert.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And what do you make of, first of all, Trump's lawyers send a cease and desist letter to Bannon, which was essentially a hollow gesture, I think, or an empty threat. But now they're also trying to stop the publication of this book, Fire and Fury, Inside the Trump White House, by Michael Wolff. Excerpts of it have appeared in a number of magazines, and of course it's been grist for the mill on cable TV. But apparently Trump's lawyer is saying that it gives rise to claims for libel that could result in substantial monetary damages and punitive damages. Mr. Trump hereby demands that you immediately cease and desist from any further publication, release, or dissemination of the book, the article, or any excerpts or summaries of either of them to any person or entity, and that you issue a full and complete retraction and apology to my client as to all statements made about him in the book and article that lack competent evidentiary support. So that's a pretty ambitious broadside they're firing at the Henry Holt Company and the author. But now we hear that the publishers are going to move the publication date forward and the book's going to be available on Friday, and it's already an Amazon bestseller.
So exactly. I think basically this is just a lot of bluster and bombast and posturing by Charles Harder, who is the attorney for Donald Trump here. The remedy for speech that you don't like is not a prior restraint. And essentially that's what Trump is asking for here, a prior restraint to stop the publication of the book before it can come out. The remedy in the United States, at least, for things that are libelous is not a prior restraint, not to stop it before it comes out, but what we call a subsequent punishment, to sue for libel afterwards, because it may turn out that the statements are actually true. So the remedy is, again, in the United States, not to stop the book before it can come out, but to allow it to come out. And then, if indeed material in it is false and defamatory to Trump, such that it would harm his reputation, then Trump's remedy and Charles Harder as his attorney would be able to sue for defamation. So the odds on this succeeding, these threatening letters, basically, these cease and desist letters that Harder has been sending both to Bannon and to the publisher of the book, the odds of those succeeding are slim to none.
So wouldn't it also, at the end of the day, result, if he were successful in any way, Trump, or at least had his day in court, he'd be liable to cross-examination, wouldn't he? And I would think that could prove to be even more embarrassing than the revelations in the book.
That's exactly right. So the plaintiff in a defamation action, in this case, Trump would be the plaintiff if he were to sue over the book. The plaintiff has the burden of proving that the statements were false. Yes, you're correct. Trump would have his deposition taken, basically a one-on-one face-to-face interview taken by the counsel for the publisher of the book and any other defendants that Trump chooses to sue, worry to actually sue, and I doubt that will really happen, but if he did. So yes, and during the deposition, then the attorneys for the publisher of the book would be able to ask Trump any wide range of questions, provided that they're somewhat relevant, minimally at least, to the question of defamation and why he is suing here. So yes, he would open himself up to a broad side of questions that he probably doesn't want to have to answer, especially because a deposition has the same force and effect as if the testimony were in a court of law. So he is under oath during a deposition, and he would certainly be questioned about that. And again, that deposition would take place earlier, long before trial. It's part of what we call the discovery process. So yes, I don't think Trump wants to have a deposition taken. We've seen presidents, like, remember, President Clinton's deposition taken in the Monica Lewinsky situation. And, you know, these are highly embarrassing for presidents to have a deposition taken. It would be videotaped. It would be audiotaped. It would be transcribed. And it subjects him to any number of questions on anything as long as it's somewhat relevant to the question of defamation.
And again, I'm speaking with Clay Calvert, who is the Brechner Eminent Scholar in Mass Communication and Director of the Marion B. Brechner First Amendment Project at the University of Florida. He's authored or co-authored more than 130 law journal articles on topics related to freedom of expression. So why do you think Trump is doing this? Because it seems at the end of the day, this is just going to help the book sales. If it's futile, if the barn door's already open and the horse is down the paddock, why do you think he's doing it?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, what you're tapping into initially is what, you know, they call the Streisand effect after Barbara Streisand. By calling attention to this, he's actually bringing more exposure to the book and promoting its sales. Had he not commented on it at all, maybe perhaps the book would not sell as much or be as popular, or as you suggested, now it's coming out 4 days in advance of the original publication date. So certainly the Streisand effect, the negative aspect here, that it, he's actually calling more attention to something that he would rather have not people see, is ironic on Trump's part. I think this is partly to get back at Steve Bannon, who was a large source for the book, is my understanding. And obviously they have had, you know, not been on great terms since Bannon left, I believe it was in April. So I think part of this is also Trump just pandering and posturing his normal bluster that he engages in anytime he doesn't like something. You know, it's funny because he claims to be a big First Amendment advocate, and yet he always attacks the press. And, you know, obviously book publishers, in this case, I believe Holt is the book publisher. Book publishers are members of the press. They're not newspapers, but they certainly are. And so this fits within Trump's general pattern of going after the press and the media in the United States. Only this case, it happens to be a book publisher, not CNN or MSNBC.
Well, we know that Trump tried to, in fact, he got many of his senior staff in the White House to sign non-disclosure agreements. And in an interview with the Washington Post during the campaign, said that he thought that all federal employees should sign a non-disclosure agreement. So his attitudes are pretty clear. I mean, I guess coming out of business where non-disclosure agreements are common, perhaps you can cut him some slack. But non-disclosure agreements for federal employees, that's...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is a different realm. And again, I think this is old Trump style. If you suggested in the business world, you can do one thing, but when you're president of the United States, you probably can't do that same thing. And I think he also feels betrayed here because my understanding is that Wolf, the author of the book, Fire and Fury, had access, significant access to the White House, you know. And I think he feels betrayed by that, by the book coming out, and feels like, I gave you access and now you turned on me. Bannon has turned on me, and I'm going to come after you, you know, with guns a-blazing, at least legally, with Charles Harder. And it's interesting, Harder has been the attorney now for multiple high-profile plaintiffs, including Melania Trump, when she went after the Daily Mail for the article suggesting that she was an escort or a prostitute. And Harder obtained, you know, a multi-million-dollar settlement on that. The terms are not precisely known. But he got a settlement from that. So, and he's also represented, Harder's represented Hulk Hogan down here in Florida, where I am, in a case against Gawker Media when they aired a sex tape of him. So Harder is really the real deal. He's a high-profile Beverly Hills attorney who is very successful in defamation privacy cases, one of the go-to people today out there. And so, you know, Trump certainly has his attorney in line.
Well, along with the Hulk Hogan case, which put Gawker Media out of business, that was secretly financed by Peter Thiel, who was one of Trump's top campaign advisors, the Silicon Valley billionaire. Jude Law, Reese Witherspoon, Clint Eastwood, Roger Ailes, they've all been clients of Harder, a Beverly Hills high-profile a libel and defamation attorney. He also, by the way, until recently, represented Harvey Weinstein.
Well, yeah, there's something you probably don't want to have represented at some point in time, or any point in time, for that matter.
Right, right. That one he's going to scrub off his resume, I'm sure. So what's your sense then of, we try to figure out why Trump did it, but are they going to follow through on this? Because the Bannon thing seems even thinner in terms of cease and desist. But
sure,
this one, obviously, as we say, you know, the book's going to be out on Friday. You see all these people on cable TV holding the book up. So everybody in the media are reading it, you know. So it's just, there's a certain level of absurdity to all this. But what's your
exactly?
What's the legal strategy here, do you think? Or is this just a lawyer with a kind of difficult client who happens to be president of the United States and is mad as hell?
I would actually agree with everything you said in that last statement. Probably a difficult client, president of the United States, and mad as hell at the situation, and probably taking his orders, obviously, from Trump in this case, because the attorney has to follow the orders of the client. The attorney doesn't act without the client's permission or the client's instruction. So by definition, the attorney has to be on the same page and taking the instructions from the client. So I think this is simply a lot of saber-rattling here. By Trump. Like I said, prior restraints on speech, stopping the publication before it can occur, that traditionally violates the First Amendment to the United States, which protects the freedom of speech and freedom of the press against government censorship. So prior restraints are typically unconstitutional. Again, the remedy here for Trump would be allow the publication to come out, which, as you just suggested, it already has. I mean, advanced copies. Many advanced copies have been released. I mean, especially in the era of the Internet, it doesn't take much to scan and upload those copies so that anybody would have them. So the copies are already out. They're going to come out later this week in advance of the initial publication date. So, yes, the horse is out of the barn, and there's very little that Trump can do other than to basically raise verbal hell in this case and call out the author of the book itself, Fire and Fury and Bannon in this case. But again, were he to sue for defamation, he would have the burden of showing falsity. And I guarantee you there probably are statements in this book that are false. The question is whether those falsities would be things that would actually harm his Trump's reputation. And then is Trump, as we talked about earlier, willing to undergo a deposition, which would be quite intrusive because the attorney is for the publisher of the book and the author of the book, and Bannon would be able to drill into Trump about why he believes his reputation is harmed, what the false statements were. And I don't think any president of the United States wants to have his deposition taken like that, especially in civil litigation. This is not the Lewinsky-Clinton situation where you had an independent special investigator, Ken Starr, in that case. This would be simply a one-on-one civil litigation case, very different scenario. And, you know, I think a thicker-skinned president would just basically suck it up rather than calling greater attention to the book. And obviously, you know, the irony, as we talked about, is basically helping the sales of the book out by people who would never have heard of it or not know about it or not cared about it. Now more people want to read it. So it's more likely to backfire than it is to be successful.
Well, the letter to the publisher was sent by Charles Harder, the lawyer we've been talking about, to both the author, Michael Wolff, and Steve Rubin, the president and publisher of Henry Holt & Company. But it seems like the author, Wolff, has covered himself a little bit because in the book itself, he has a kind of caveat, I believe it's at the beginning of the book, that says the accounts that he collected since he was hanging out in the White House for a long time, he had a kind of permanent perch there, even interviewed Trump, are collected, quote, are in conflict with one another. Many in Trumpian fashion are baldly untrue. He said that he let the players offer their versions, in turn allowing the reader to judge them, and in other instances settled on a version of events I believe to be true. So that seems to me to, I don't see it as a cop-out so much as a way to say, look, you know, I mean, it sounds like that White House is a rat's nest at any rate. They're all out stabbing each other in the back and talking out of school. So it seems like a perfectly reasonable caveat to me to say, well, I'm basically trying to report what everybody said, and then some of it doesn't add up, and you can all figure it out, and I'm trying to figure it out. What do you make of it?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, basically what he's saying is, yeah, here's what people said. I'm just a conduit. I'm not going to, you know, I'm just conveying what they said. I'm not going to be the arbiter of whether this is true or not. Kind of you can decide for yourself based on their comments. Typically, disclaimers like that really are not always very effective. The question is, would a reasonable reader take away a defamatory meaning, something that would harm the reputation of Trump? So if I were a reasonable reader of the book, I found multiple conflicting viewpoints. what would I take away? What's the meaning that I take away? That this is an assertion of fact, or is it merely one person's opinion here? It's conflicted by another opinion, and therefore, as a reasonable reader, I'm not going to take it as a statement of fact, but maybe a viewpoint, and not necessarily an assertion of this is a factual truth and it happens to be false. So again, disclaimers in libel cases, I don't always get the person, don't get the defendant off the hook. This is because they said, oh, it's fictionalized, or this is, you know, conflicting viewpoints. Again, the question is, what would a reasonable reader take away? And if a reasonable reader, after reading, and it has to be taken in the entirety, so you can't take one sentence out of context. So let's say it's a chapter of the book, you'd have to read that entire chapter. You probably have to read the entire book and ask yourself at the end of that book, what would a reasonable reader take away? Is there a false statement of fact that would harm Trump's reputation here? And that, of course, would be left for the judge and the jury to decide in a libel case.
Well, just in closing, Stephen Bannon himself has not refuted any of the statements that are quoted in the book. So that's pretty telling, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, I think it is. I mean, and if he's not refuting anything that's in there, that suggests that he believes, at least suggests that he believes it's true. We don't know why, of course, he hasn't come out. Maybe he's just covering himself at this stage. Maybe he's talked to his own attorneys. You would hope that anybody involved in the situation would have talked to their own attorneys. But yes, that's a good point.
Well, Clay Calvert, I thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Clay Calvert, who is the Brechner Eminent Scholar in Mass Communication, director of the Marion B. Brechner First Amendment Project at the University of Florida. He's authored or co-authored more than 130 law journal articles on topics related to freedom of expression. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org, where you can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.